Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where we talk about mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Virginia Gamble. And join me in this week's compelling episode of the podcast, where I sit down with Jonathan Glassman, the visionary behind a groundbreaking telemedicine platform designed to help individuals reduce or eliminate their alcohol consumption. Jonathan opens up about his personal struggles with alcohol and the transformative journey that led him to develop this life-changing solution. The reason why I wanted to do this episode, especially at this time of the year, is because I find often with the holiday season, people struggle to say no or set boundaries around alcohol and often feel pressured to consume. Therefore, in this episode, listeners will gain insight into the challenges Jonathan faced and how his own experiences became the driving force behind the creation of the innovative platform. Together, Jonathan and I explore the stigma surrounding alcohol dependency, sharing candid stories that resonate with anyone who has faced similar struggles. Jonathan Hunt Glassman is the CEO of Or Health, a telemedicine platform that provides access to medication proven to help people drink less or quit alcohol altogether. Jonathan is a healthcare industry veteran, having worked as a product manager, strategy consultant, and executive. He is also a person in recovery from alcohol use disorder, having experienced the benefits of medication-assisted treatment firsthand. I hope you really get a lot out of this episode, and if at the end, if you could leave a 5-star review or a comment in the comment section, I would truly appreciate it. All right, Jonathan, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today or this morning, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to talk with you. But before we jump into our conversation, I do want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to the listeners and let us know a little bit about who you are, what you do, and where you're based in the world.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation to join you. It's great to connect. My name is Jonathan. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Or Health. What we do is make it easy and convenient and private for people who want to drink less or quit alcohol altogether to get access to treatment that can be a first step towards that goal, specifically access to safe, effective, approved medications mm-hmm. that make alcohol less enjoyable and so therefore make it easier to cut back or to quit. As I'm sure we'll get into, I have a lot of both professional and personal passion around that topic, but that's the nutshell version.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for sharing that. And just out of curiosity, like, obviously this is a somewhat of a unique program. Why are you offering this? And why do you believe people would take the medication to make alcohol less enjoyable when it is something people pursue for enjoyment? Right. So where's the paradox coming from then?
Sure. Alcohol is built into our culture, and it's true that the majority of adults drink alcohol. The majority of those do so without negative consequences in their life, and they can enjoy it as a social technology, as a source of relaxation. But there is a non-trivial group of people who drink for whom it becomes a problem. And I was one of those. That goes by a lot of names. Maybe historically, alcoholism, that's kind of an outdated term these days. It's been replaced by terms like alcohol use disorder, binge drinking, heavy drinking, alcohol misuse. All of those are different ways of expressing that alcohol is creating negative consequences to physical health, to mental health, to important social and professional relationships and obligations. And that's really who this medication is for. It's not a lifestyle drug. It is a medication for people who are seeing those negative consequences and looking for an additional tool to put in their toolkit, perhaps alongside what they're doing on their own to drink less, perhaps alongside forms of psychosocial support like coaching or therapy or a support mm-hmm. group, an additional tool to kind of work on the biological mechanisms mm-hmm. that can lead to one or two drinks becoming way too many drinks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And currently, where are you offering the services or the medication? And is it fairly localized at this point?
So we are localized to the United States, although there are ways to get access to this medication in most countries. But within the United States, we operate right now in 41 of 50 states.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe let's just jump into the juicy part of this conversation. And what inspired you to want to do this?
I really see this work as a bit of a coming together for me of my professional and my personal backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So on the professional side, I've spent my whole career in healthcare as a product manager, as a strategy consultant, as an mm-hmm. in-house strategy leader at large insurance companies, often working on issues of behavioral health, chronic health conditions, and early intervention in those conditions. But at the same time, personally, I struggled with alcohol misuse pretty much my entire adult life. So what started as binge drinking in high school and college became a pattern of drinking to blackout in my 20s. And then as I saw peers put excessive alcohol use behind them in their late 20s, early 30s, the opposite was happening for me. I was mm-hmm. starting to have multi-day binges and experience some of the symptoms of withdrawal, both mm-hmm. physical and mental health on the mm-hmm. back end of those. So things were pretty rough, and it was no secret to me over those 15 years or so that I had a drinking problem. So mm-hmm. I sought treatment in a lot of the places that first come to mind, AA, individual psychotherapy, emergency room, and pretty much always heard the same thing, which was you need to stop drinking entirely and start going to meetings. Mm-hmm. And I gave that a shot, but it never worked. What was much more of a turning point was connecting with a primary care physician who did two things that felt brand new to me. One was accept my goal of moderation rather than abstinence. Mm-hmm. And then the second was suggest medication as a tool mm-hmm. in the toolkit. And those two things at that point in my life were pretty transformational. I felt like I was finally able to get control over alcohol rather than vice versa. Mm-hmm. And once I saw that change in my own life, felt there was an opportunity to help many of the millions more who struggle with alcohol use disorder. And frankly, also build a business by creating convenient private access to this same medication.
Right. Absolutely. There's a few things I want to explore based on what you've shared from your personal story. So first of all, I guess just to understand, it is kind of counterintuitive when you think, okay, abstinence versus moderation, right? For me, I would wonder, okay, well, how do you like moderate when you have a problem with it, right? But I can also understand it could be very difficult to just go cold turkey and stop. So what for you, why was that balance needed initially for you to be able to distance yourself from alcohol?
I had tried abstinence and it mm-hmm. hadn't worked. That was the main motivation for trying moderation. I always found that there were social settings where it was just too hard for me mm-hmm. to say no to drinking entirely.
Right.
Other side of that coin is there are, of course, people for whom moderation is not a realistic goal. And abstinence is more realistic. It's certainly more of a black and white distinction mm-hmm. between meeting the goal and not. So when I pursued moderation, it was important to me to put some specific parameters around that. It can be more slippery. And so for me, that was never wanting to black out again. And I kind mm-hmm. of told myself, I'm going to give this 6 months. If I'm still experiencing blackouts, then I'm going to have to try to go back to abstinence. And, you know, in fact, some of the members of OR that I'm proudest of are those who start on the medication with a goal of moderation. In fact, the majority of our members start with that goal. and then find that it's not working for them and graduate to a goal of abstinence. That takes some personal strength to kind of see what's working, admit that everything is not going just as you drew it up, and make adjustments.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And the other piece, again, wanting to dive deeper into your story, is often a lot of people do say AA is the only answer, right, for a lot of people. But that may not work for everyone, right? And you're obviously an example of that. Why was AA not working, and what in the AA model or the 12-step program was perhaps not sitting with you or not working for you, right? Like what were those, some of those things for you that were different, and then going to see a physician, what was different about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I always like to say that AA has helped millions of people recover from alcohol problems. And that's millions more than we've helped it, or probably all of us combined. And so we should have, you know, a lot of humility in any critique of AA. And in fact, we have a lot of, you know, OR members who are doing medication plus AA. So I'm a big AA fan. But as you say, it is not the only option, far from it. And not the best fit for every individual.
Right.
For me, it was some of the first steps that I really struggled with, admitting powerlessness over alcohol, probably just because of who I am in a lot of ways. That wasn't what I was looking for. I was more looking for control over alcohol. Higher power, spirituality has just not been a huge part of my upbringing or life. And so it was hard to find meaning in that, even though it, many people define it differently. It doesn't have to be a Judeo-Christian God. And then lastly, kind of more practically, just the idea of going to, you know, meetings regularly just didn't seem like it fit into my life at that point. So, you know, the by contrast, you know, the things that were different about the physician I connected with, and the reality is we don't have enough physicians who feel comfortable treating addiction and are competent at it. But I got lucky in this physician I connected with. I would say the two things that felt very different from my experiences in AA were support for moderation as a legitimate goal of recovery. And two, the kind of enthusiastic support for medication as a tool, and not, you know, replacing one drug with another, or cheating, or using a crutch. You know, there are certainly, one of AA's strengths is there's so much diversity across meetings. Different, you know, no two meetings necessarily feel the same way. And there are definitely AA meetings that are supportive of medication. But there are also still pockets of the traditional recovery community where medication is seen as a last resort, or the easy way out, or the worst is that phrase, replacing one drug with another, which I think when it comes to a medication like naltrexone that is not addictive, not subject to abuse, it really isn't a very substantive criticism.
And I guess what you're highlighting here is, and what we've tried to capture here is, it's, you know, there's no one solution, and often people have to figure out what works for them. And just like you did, you know, you obviously gave AA a fair shot, but you realized that maybe this isn't for me for the various reasons you mentioned. Now, you also said you worked with a psychotherapist, and often there's an aspect of alcohol or whatever substance we're abusing. It could be as a form of numbing or escape. Are you able to share, like, you know, you obviously talked about even the mental health implications of alcohol abuse. Are you able to share what you were able to discover in your own journey through psychotherapy, and what was going on below the surface?
Yeah, sure. So I got a lot out of therapy. My, you know, I think the diagnoses that I presented with were anxiety and depression. I think both of which, you know, alcohol, as you say, can be an effective short-term form of self-medication, even though in the long term it probably exacerbates both problems. What was driving that for me largely was being overly concerned with the opinions of others, or at least what I perceived to be the opinions of others, kind of constantly always feeling like I had to be vigilant to be acting perfectly, which is an unrealistic standard. Feeling uncomfortable in social settings, worrying about how I was perceived. And I think it's probably pretty easy to see how alcohol came into the mix there. In a social setting, especially in college, for example, where it's, you know, so baked into the environment, kind of alcohol being just a super seductive way to ease some of that social anxiety.
Yeah, for sure. And when we talk about society in general, it is very hard, right? Like, I think for me personally, when I wanted to step away from that, I had to change my social circle. And I think one of the things with any form of addiction, your environment makes a huge impact. And often when you're trying to change a lifestyle, it means changing that environment, so it's not conducive to whatever substance you're trying to limit or cut away. How was that for you? And did you feel, and as you mentioned earlier, you did feel that pressure of not being able to say no, but then after where you got to that point where it was no longer a part of your life, what did that look like for your social life or even the friends you had in your life?
As is so often the case when we, you know, make a positive change that we've been concerned about, a lot of that fallout or negative consequences that we're afraid of just turn out not to be as bad in reality as they were in our imagination.
Yeah.
My friends are still my friends. You know, some of them drink more than I do. Some of them drink less. You know, all those important relationships are still there. I did find that I had to get, you know, thoughtful and strategic about it more tactically in certain social situations. Mm-hmm. And so getting okay with passing on the round of shots, getting okay with feeling tired at, you know, 10:30 PM, which, you know, maybe is a combination of my, you know, advancing age and drinking less and not being, you know, pepped up, and it being okay to go home and go to sleep. And in fact, maybe even being nice to wake up relatively early in the morning, feeling refreshed rather than terrible. So there were some adjustments, but, you know, in general, people cared a lot less about how much I was drinking than I thought they would. And, you know, the most important relationships are still there. And then, of course, there's room when you're drinking a lot less or quitting to deepen other relationships that don't revolve around alcohol.
Right.
And to reengage in habits, activities, positive sources of pleasure and reward that alcohol is probably crowding out a bit.
Yeah. And that's such an important distinction because, as you mentioned, I think when you remove the substance side of it, you're more engaged, you're having more meaningful conversations, you're more present, you're not missing out. Like, I think, you know, for a lot of people, if they're hungover, they're having to like cancel on commitments, which they didn't foresee they would have to, right? And it does create a barrier between the individual and some of those meaningful relationships, as you alluded to. Did you notice that shift in yourself as well as you were kind of on this journey and making those changes?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that one of the doctors we work with, you know, says is that even as you're saying no to alcohol, it's important to be saying yes to other things that that are meaningful for you. And so I found more opportunity to invest in my relationship with my wife, you know, authentically. And, you know, there are too many relationships more important than primary romantic partner. And so, you know, that of course can come with moments of, you know, discomfort. That's part of authenticity, I think. But it you know, ultimately can be quite rewarding. You know, one of the worst experiences I remember when I was drinking a ton was sometimes have someone say, "Oh, it was such a meaningful conversation we had the other night. It was so great to connect with you," and I didn't remember it. And so I think that kind of encapsulates, you know, the ways in which alcohol, you know, maybe in the moment can feel really good, but is in the larger equation subtracting more than it's adding for some of us.
Right, right. And I guess now you're on this part of your journey, why is it important for you to be so open and vulnerable about not only your personal journey, but professionally what you're doing? Like, why, yeah, what motivates you for being able to be so open and share with others?
Yeah, I am pretty much an open book at this point, because there are, you know, still millions and millions of people who are suffering from excessive alcohol use. In the United States, estimated 30 million people meeting the diagnostic criteria for alcohol use disorder, less than 10% getting treatment of any sort, less than 2% getting prescribed medication that can treat their condition. There are, of course, a lot of drivers of that. Certainly stigma, but also not necessarily being familiar with the full range of treatment options that are available. Lack of confidence that anything will help, that there is a path forward. And so I feel it's important for people like me that have struggled mightily, but have achieved recovery, to be as open as they feel comfortable with. About those stories, because I think they can be sources of hope and hopefully inspiration to take action. I feel especially motivated to tell my story because it doesn't necessarily follow the traditional path of, oh, I hit rock bottom. There was some moment of intervention. I quit drinking entirely. You know, and I'm an active member of AA. That's a great story, but it's not mine. And I think the more that folks can have real examples, not just understand intellectually, but actually see and hear, oh, there are aspects of this person's story. No two people's are going to be exactly the same, but there are aspects of people's story that feel accessible or similar to me. That's a step. It's one thing I can do to try and close that huge gap between the number of people who would benefit from drinking less or quitting and those who are actively engaged in treatment today.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, what I gather from that too is sometimes people need to realize you don't have to hit rock bottom to make a change, right? And the other point I wanted to capture, as we were talking about earlier too, is even from a habit perspective, it's recommended that you don't just stop doing a habit that you consider bad, but you replace it with something positive. And those types of changes are more lasting because exactly for that reason that you're replacing a habit because you still need to do something, right? And that's very crucial as you touched on. But I guess now I do want to shift towards understanding the medication side of it if you're able to share some of the details, because I think personally for me, when I think about anything exogenous, I wonder, okay, well, what am I putting into my body? Do I need that or can I manage without it? You did mention there are no side effects, but just trying to understand, I guess more so because I'm curious in terms of how does it work chemically and what is the medication actually doing that makes the consumption of alcohol, I guess, not pleasant?
First, I just want to clarify one thing. You know, all prescription medications do have the risk of side effects, and that is true of naltrexone as well. The most common is nausea or tummy troubles that tend to dissipate over the first week or two. But in terms of the mechanism, so there are, in the U.S., there are three medications approved for the treatment of alcohol problems, and then some additional ones that are used without a specific indication. leading clinicians, including the ones we work with, recommend that most people start with a medication called naltrexone. So that's the one we're most focused on increasing access to. It works by blocking a specific opioid receptor in the brain. And that's it's the receptor that is most activated by alcohol. And so as a result, one may feel less pleasure, less excitement when drinking, and then over time, fewer thoughts of drinking, less of a desire to drink, fewer cravings, if that's something that someone is experiencing. And that was kind of the perfect fit for me, in that there were, even when I was kind of in the throes of the problem, there were instances where I could have one or two drinks and be fine. It was more somewhere around 3, 4, 5 that I was letting a runaway train out of the station. And so naltrexone is a very great fit, a very good fit for that profile, in that it kind of interrupts that feedback loop. Instead of feeling like this feels good, I want more, this feels great, I want a lot more, it can turn the experience into, yeah, all right, this is okay. I'm still getting some of the relaxation effects maybe, but I don't have that compulsion to drink as much as I can. And so based on those mechanisms, you know, it is also a kind of good fit for moderation as well as sobriety goals, which is one of the reasons it's our frontline tool.
Right. Okay. And then what's the typical length that's prescribed for the medication, and can people go on and off, or yeah, how does that work from that perspective?
Yeah, naltrexone has a really good safety profile, and there is no problem that's going to arise from starting and stopping treatment. You don't need to wean down as you do with some medications. That being said, if it's working for people in achieving their goals to drink less or quit, we recommend sticking with it for the better part of a year to A, kind of give time for kind of your brain to rewire. And then two, to kind of give yourself some room to do some of that associated work that you were describing, maybe addressing any co-occurring mental health issues. Certainly finding time and engaging with relationships and activities that are going to fill the void in a really good way. And then it is safe to continue indefinitely. So that's what some folks choose to do. They're like, it's working, my life's so much better, why change? But then there are also folks, and I think you voiced a little bit of this, who kind of have as a goal in their recovery getting off the medication and sustaining mm-hmm. positive changes without it. And you know, I think that's totally legitimate too. Just like with most medications, we say, you know, don't declare victory too soon, you know, really get the full benefit out of it. And then if you're doing well and feeling secure in your recovery in 6 months, a year, 18 months, mm-hmm. maybe it makes sense in consultation with your physician to discontinue. And then lastly, yeah. You know, there's no shame in coming back. You know, we've had members who've, you know, taken a break, found that, you know, it could be helpful again in the future. And that's totally fine too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I caught from just even taking the medication for a shorter period, relatively speaking, can give you a lot of clarity that you may not have if you're still drinking. Right. And through that clarity, like you said, you may gain awareness of how it's maybe impacting your relationships or just your individual performance or your well-being. And then you can kind of gauge and then make certain adjustments as you go along. Right. And then go off the medication or maybe stay on it or come back. So that's good to know. Anything else you feel like that is of value that the listeners can learn about this type of treatment that we haven't covered, or even from your own story that you would like to share with people? I know it's a bit of a two-part question here.
yeah, you know, on the medication, probably the one question that you didn't ask that I hear all the time is, if this is so great, how come I've never heard about it? There's no single answer to that, but there are a few reasons. One is it's been generic since before direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising really existed. So there's no particular pharma company with an economic incentive to make it a household name. Two, as we briefly touched on, physicians still don't get enough training on treating addiction, certainly relative to how common alcohol use problems are going to be in their patient panel. Right. There is still in some corners a little bit of stigma around using the medication. Right. More broadly, let me try and boil down some of the things we've touched on to three key messages that I would want to share with anyone who's struggling with alcohol problems or has someone close to them in their life which by the way is probably everybody. Number one, recovery is possible. Mm-hmm. I am far from alone in that. The majority of people who experience alcohol use disorder will achieve recovery, and there are more people living in recovery than in a state of substance use disorder today. Mm-hmm. Two, as you said really well, treatment options exist. And I put an underline on the word options there.
Yeah.
So it behooves you to do a little checking around and learn about a few options. You don't have to become an encyclopedia of treatment options. But if you're not seeing right in front of you, or the stories you've seen on movies and TV, you don't feel like they work for you, check out some other options and trust your instincts on what's going to be a good fit for you and your path. Lastly, it's never too early or too late to get started in feeling better. You said something really important, which is you don't need to wait for rock bottom to start getting better. But by the same token, no matter how terrible things feel today, how low things feel, it is still very much possible for tomorrow to be better than today. Mm-hmm.
And thanks for catching that. Obviously, that's a very important question around why is it not as common and well documented. But I wonder, because the liquor industry is a big industry, do you feel like that factors in? Because obviously there is that financial aspect as well, right? Anytime there's a major industry that could be at a compromise or people's pockets won't get filled, does that incentivize maybe minimizing the impact these medications can have?
I don't know. I think, it is definitely true that we are inundated with messages that normalize drinking and even normalize certain levels of alcohol misuse. Mm-hmm. Some of those are purely commercial advertisements. Others are cultural, movies, TV.
Yeah.
And I think, when it comes to the use of medication, I think what you can also say is there is not a well-sized countervailing war chest to promote the use of medication. Especially with the approved medications being off patent, there's no reason for anyone to spend millions of dollars a year promoting these medications. Right. So I'm taking every opportunity I can get. it's not equal to the alcohol industry's advertising budget, but it is an important message to get out there.
For sure. Yeah. And the advertisement is an important factor I do want to highlight, because I recently just, it's funny. I was walking with a friend and we were walking by a bunch of bars, and every bar had a sign advertising how cheap their shots are or how much fun you'll have or how cool you'll feel. And I was contrasting that to cigarettes, for example, right? Because the tobacco industry had their share of battles, in the 80s and 90s. And you see what cigarette packs they don't advertise that you're going to feel great. In fact, they do the opposite, that, hey, this is what your lungs are going to look like, or your face will look like this, or whatever it is. It does the opposite. And so the consumer is making almost a conscious choice that, yes, I am going down this route, and these are some of the consequences. Whereas with alcohol, it's kind of like, no, this is how great you'll feel. Go enjoy that instant gratification. Don't worry about what happens later, right? And I don't know what your thoughts are around that, but it was interesting, and I pointed it out to my buddy too, and we kind of laughed about it. But I don't know how funny it is when you consider some of the consequences a lot of people go through with the abuse of alcohol. And we've touched on briefly the whole aspect of rock bottom too, right? And yeah.
I think that's a very astute observation. You know, just personally, you know, I was raised in a, you know, Californian health conscious, you know, environment. Yeah. And was kind of, from as long as I can remember, kind of almost disgusted by the concept of smoking, and like looked at cigarettes as like, you know, poison. Yeah. Alcohol is more deceptive, I think, in its approach. You know, partially because there are many people who can use it in moderation or in limited quantities and not experience negative consequences. But it definitely comes billed to us in this kind of package of pleasure that you described. And then even for, you know, those of us who are experiencing quite severe, you know, addiction, quite negative consequences in our lives, those all come after the experience. You know, in the moment it presents in a intoxicating, I guess pun intended there, an intoxicating way where it feels good. It makes that, you know, football game you're watching more exciting. It makes it easier to start a conversation with a member, a romantic prospect. It just looks good on the surface. And some of the consequences, which again, not everyone experiences, are below the surface.
For sure. And I see a lot of, like, even employment settings are based around alcohol, right? Like if you're trying to be in sales or you're trying to land a big contract, a lot of those deals or discussions don't happen unless people are a few drinks in, right? So it is a cultural and societal issue that we've touched on earlier in the recording as well. But yeah, I think it's important for people to identify that. But also, to your point earlier, often we create a perception in our head that maybe if I say no, I'm going to have these unintended consequences. And sometimes that's not true. I think at the end of the day, you really have to convince yourself, and how you get there, we've touched on as well, could be in various ways, whether it's an AA type of scenario or perhaps the medicated route. But it's figuring out what works for you and what your end goal is. And to your point, maybe for some people, it's just being able to moderate it and not be controlled by the substance. And for perhaps other people, it's completely removing it from their lives for various reasons. So yeah, I think that probably captures a lot of the things I think I wanted to get out of this conversation. So I do want to thank you for your vulnerability, and again, for your time to come on here. I do give guests an opportunity to share with listeners how they can be found, or if people do want to get a hold of them, whether it's social media or online in general. I'll leave that up to you if you'd like to share some of those means.
Sure. So the best place to get in touch with me is at oarhealth.com, oarhealth.com. You can schedule 15 minutes to chat with me just like this. There's also a lot more information on the topics that we touched on in this conversation.
Okay. Well, no, thank you again, Jonathan. I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story and having this conversation with me. I think it's very much needed in today's world. I know a lot of people also struggled with alcohol, especially during the pandemic, because there were not many options, and people turn to that. So I think it's much needed. The more we can talk about this and highlight this is important.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Jonathan. As always, please leave a review or a comment in the comment section. I always love hearing from you. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. Thank you again, and until next week.